Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Randy Randis, appearing on behalf of petitioners in this case. With me at counsel's table is Glenn Ortman as co-counsel. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Before discussing the two fundamental errors in the FERC orders that we appeal, I first want to just to note that the rate applications that we filed were pursuant to our statutory and contractual rights as transmission owners of transmission facilities that are clearly being used by PJM for providing jurisdictional service. We only included in our rate applications the costs of the Rock Springs transmission facilities. We did not include costs of the direct attachment facilities, which we own but are not part of the integrated grid, or the cost of the Peach Bottom upgrades, which are part of the integrated grid but which we do not own. Our applications were summarily dismissed without any determinations on the rate of return, rate base, and the normal factors in a rate-making proceeding. Let me first identify the two errors and then describe each in turn. The first, FERC erroneously applied Section 37 of the PJM tariff, even though the parties had all recognized the facilities were transmission facilities, not network upgrades, and even though PJM and PECO Energy represented that they were transmission facilities, never identified them as network upgrades under Section 37 of the PJM tariff in their filings at FERC. And second, FERC erred as a matter of law in interpreting the amended Transmission Owners Agreement, known as the TOA. The amendments were agreed upon by the parties, and FERC wrongly concluded that the petitioners did not have a right to recover revenue and wrongly ignored the drafting history in reaching its interpretation. Regarding the first error, when FERC concluded that the standard PJM generator interconnection provisions in Section 37 applied to the Rock Springs transmission facilities, they did so despite the fact that neither PJM nor PECO identified these facilities as network upgrades covered by Section 37 in the filed interconnection service agreement, which PJM filed, or in the interconnection agreement, which PECO Energy filed. Moreover, both PJM and PECO in their FERC submittals described the petitioner's transmission ownership arrangement as unique, represented a transmission owner to transmission owner arrangement, not a generator interconnection arrangement. In fact, PECO went further. They represented in their FERC filing when they submitted the interconnection agreement that the PJM standard interconnection provisions in Section 37 did not apply, did not address the situation. In fact, in the interconnection agreement, when referring to our transmission facilities, they referred to them as transmission facilities 46 times. They never once called them network upgrades. That's a JA 429 to 456. FERC accepted the parties' contracts as filed. They didn't order any change, and FERC expressed no concern as to the impact of these unique arrangements upon PJM's standard interconnection provisions. It's undisputed that the Rock Springs transmission facilities are an important part of the integrated PJM grid. Power continuously flows over them from all sources on the PJM system, and they replaced a line that was in PECO's rate base. And at least one other TO, PECO, has in rate base facilities virtually identical to the Rock Springs transmission facilities. FERC says it's unfair for transmission customers to pay these costs. Yet before we build our facilities, transmission customers paid for service over PECO's older line. Now they get free use of a new replacement line and a new substation. The substation enhances system operations by enabling PJM to curtail power in that area. They can curtail power from Rock Springs to Peach Bottom or from Rock Springs to Keeney. They had no ability to curtail power in this area before the facilities were built. So regarding the second error, FERC erred when it interpreted
the basis for characterizing the facilities as conferring a net benefit?
Excuse me?
Is that the basis on which you say the facilities confer a benefit to the system?
To be clear, Your Honor, we think they provided an additional benefit, but just by nature of owning these facilities, which are part of the integrated grid, they in and of themselves provide benefits to the system.
Namely?
Because they're part of the integrated grid being used for transmission service.
Well, what's the benefit of having that as part of the integrated grid?
Well, it's one of the main arteries, Your Honor, of the PJM system.
There was no problem that was being solved by the addition of these facilities, no problem on the grid.
There was no previous problem.
So what was the benefit of having these facilities attached?
Well, an additional benefit, having the substation allows you to curtail power in either direction. But again, we're not basing our case on establishment.
Did you raise that point below?
Yes, Your Honor.
In the petition for rehearing?
I believe we did, Your Honor.
In the petition for rehearing, this ability to curtail was raised below?
I don't recall on that.
I don't think so.
Certainly not in the opinion on reconsideration. I don't recall their address.
Well, Your Honor, we did note that the substation is built twice the size of what would be required in a standard generator connection.
Well, that's not the same. The argument you just made now, which is the ability to curtail power. I'm just asking a jurisdictional question. We can't listen to that argument if you didn't raise it in the petition for rehearing. I don't remember it. I'm not saying it wasn't there. You think it was?
We'll double-check, Your Honor, and provide you decide for the end of the day. But at any rate, the basis of our petition is that we own transmission facilities that were formerly in rate base. These are new facilities that replaced facilities that were formerly in rate base, and now these are not. Now, the second error regarding how we interpreted the TOA amendments that resulted from negotiations between the petitioners.
Ask for one second. The facilities that you eliminated by cutting the line,
yes,
are those still in the rate base of PECO? And they paid for them. I assume that the capital costs are still in the rate base somehow.
Your Honor, each year TOs have to revise their formula rates. Whether or not PECO eliminated any portion of that cost in the rate base, I do not know.
Well, so this is sort of the question Chief Judge Ginsburg was asking, which is, if all you're doing is replacing lines that were there and working fine before, and if they're still charging for that since they originally built those lines, what's the benefit to the system to allow you to charge for it now?
Well, Your Honor, I guess two answers. One, PECO may very well have reduced the rate base. We don't know. But second, because these facilities form such an important part of the PJM grid, they provide benefits because they're being used for providing transmission service. So we replaced a line that was in rate base, and our facilities are now providing the same function, if not a better function, but they're not in rate base.
The Commission recited that, at least in rehearing, that the reason that you replaced the existing, built what you did, and thereby replaced the existing PECO facilities, was you didn't want to wait for PECO itself to do that, right?
Your Honor, yes, let me respond to that.
If that's the case, I can't imagine any basis on which PECO's prior facility could be pushed out of the rate.
Well, Your Honor,
because you're in a hurry, you're a volunteer.
Well, Your Honor, just to answer that question, the hurry was we're trying to keep the lights on. These units are peaker units. Old Dominion was very concerned that there was insufficient peaking capacity in that region of PJM, and they had an obligation to provide service to their members. If they did not build the peaker plants on time, this region of PJM, which has insufficient peaking capacity, would not have it available. That was the cause for the construction rush, was the need for keeping the plants online, having plants online for peak needs. The peaking plants, as they imply, come on at peak times when there's a peak demand on the system.
That's the reason for having and the benefit of having the generating facilities, not the transmission.
That's correct, Your Honor, but for the overall bulk power system, and was explains why we needed to get the schedule accelerated, and PECO could not do that for us. So that's why we worked out this arrangement whereby PECO would not build them, we would build and own them.
So your argument, as I understand, is that 37 doesn't apply here, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Whether you qualify under it is a subsequent issue.
Yes, we're saying that Section 37 doesn't apply. They get the 37 by calling network upgrades, but they did not identify them in the interconnection agreement or the interconnection service agreement. And as I mentioned, PECO Energy in their filing said Section 37 doesn't address this unique transmission owner to transmission owner arrangement. It's not a standard generator interconnection arrangement. Regarding the second error, this involved their interpretation of the TOA amendments. FERC reviewed two different interpretations of the amendment to Section 2.2.1. Either one, the petitioners would have rights to seek revenue recovery for use of their transmission facilities if they elected to do so. Or two, the only right secured by petitioners was the right to have a rate application summarily dismissed by FERC. When faced with these differing interpretations, FERC erroneously concluded that it was unambiguous that the petitioners, through the negotiations, secured only the right to have the rate applications.
You don't mean that the right to unilaterally file means that FERC must always accept the filing, do you?
Your Honor, the right to unilaterally file means that it should be accepted and addressed according to FERC's standard rate-making proceedings.
Right, but if there is in a hypothetical situation,
right.
Imagine that you made a filing which, on its face, violated cost causation principles.
Right.
And FERC said, well, we're not, you know, this violates the principle. We don't need to get into the details of the, because, you know, the first step is clear that it's no good. That would be okay, wouldn't it?
Well, Your Honor, FERC can summarily dismiss where something is outside its rules and regulations, but this wasn't the case here.
Right, so it's not, it's not inconsistent with that provision, which allows you to unilaterally file, for FERC to say, okay, you filed, but in this particular case, it's clear to us that you're wrong. The issue is not whether that's inconsistent with the right to file, but whether FERC is wrong in saying you're clearly wrong. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, yes. We're saying FERC was wrong in saying we were clearly wrong.
Right, but not that there's a, it's not really that there's a, that there's a, pro, that this has anything to do with your right to file. This
well,
is really
be,
only a question of whether they made a mistake in how to deal with your filing.
Yes, Your Honor, but with one thing to add. The language that was added to 2.2.1 was based on our negotiations. If there was no right to forego, if there was no basic right because this class of facilities are ineligible for recovery, then that language is superfluous. So this is the only facilities we brought to the table, which they knew. And they knew that the only reason we didn't want revenue at that time was because of our concerns about exempt wholesale generator status under the Holding Company Act. And that's everything our negotiators included in their affidavits, which were basically ignored by the Commission in, when they reached their unambiguous interpretation, was that the Exempt Wholesale Generator Holding Company Act concern was expressed, that at no time during the negotiations of these amendments was it ever brought up that you couldn't recover for these facilities. It was brought up that if you want to recover, you have to file Section 205, not that it was some class of ineligible facilities that could not come about. So if we didn't have the right to forego.
I'm not understanding what you mean by it was brought up that if you want to recover, you have to file the two of them. Who brought up what and when? Who did something that you're referring to as it was brought up that?
Our negotiators.
That sounds like a government statement, mistakes were made.
Right. Your Honor, our negotiators were, for Cedars was Stephen Tessum. He has an affidavit submitted.
Who is it that you, to whom you are attributing the statement that if you want to recover, you have to file the 205?
Well, this was Mr. Tessum's affidavit at JA 293 to 294, our negotiator, and Old Dominion's negotiator, Mr. Tatum, at 418 to 4, I'm sorry, I'll get you the.
So you're not saying that anybody from FERC ever gave you any indication that if
no
you
one from FERC.
Problem.
These were negotiations between PJM,
right.
The transmission owners.
So that does not make FERC right or wrong when they later disallow your filing, does it?
Well, Your Honor, when they accepted the agreements, and there's this new language that's highlighted that's, you know, the right to forego revenue, there was no concern expressed, nothing about what does this relate to, and that. We were an atypical transmissioner.
But they were not at that point faced with the question of your recovery.
Well, no, they were at the context of the amendments that were identified. And
do you think
clearly one
pass
is that
on, they have to pass on the future effective detail or every part of it in order to accept, when they accept the agreement, they're passing on all of the effect of all the details in a way favorable to the party who will later assert them?
I didn't hear the last part of that. I'm sorry.
In a way favorable to the party who will later assert them.
Yes, Your Honor. Right. Okay. Well,
you can take that position.
Yeah, that's our position, especially since...
Was FERC privy to these negotiations that you're talking about?
They were not, Your Honor.
Yes.
It was FERC and the PJM, and then PJM.
The most FERC did was let you file the agreement, is that...
Well, they accepted and approved it without expressing any concern. And now they have adopted a construction that Section 37 applies when it was never identified. And then they said, well...
There's probably lots of things that aren't identified in the agreement that could be litigated later.
Well, this is such a big thing, Your Honor. If this is such a bedrock principle that network upgrades in Section 37 is so preclusive, it was never identified as a network upgrade in the interconnection service agreement or the interconnection agreement. Never. Always identified as transmission facilities.
I'm just going to display my great ignorance here, which I hesitate to do, but I will anyway. Is this only an issue between PJM and Dominion? If you get to add these costs, aren't there other customers down the line who wind up having to pay?
Your Honor, when we filed an application, not one customer group protested. Several of the TOs came in, but not a customer group, a municipal group, a customer group. I think the impact was about 2 cents per kilowatt, not 2 cents
per
kilowatt hour.
But this is a question about obviously this isn't a question about the amount, this is a question about the principle.
Right.
And whether particular customers object or not, FERC has a theory about how it wants an efficient market to work.
Right.
So it is the case that it isn't only a question of the distribution of costs between PJM and Old Dominion, right? There are outsiders to the
yes, Your Honor. They would be paid by ratepayers.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor. What we really have is a situation where there's two different structures. There's a standard generator interconnection structure where there's no ownership, but no ownership responsibilities and no ownership rights, or transmission ownership as set forth in the TOA with both ownership rights and ownership responsibilities. FERC has imposed an anomalous structure, ownership obligations with no ownership rights, and a denial of our most fundamental right, the right to revenue, which this court in Atlantic City has recognized as a very significant right. This anomalous structure is really not set forth in any of the contracts entered into. With regard to, I mentioned before that PECO Energy had in filing of the interconnection agreement, that they represented that the PJM standard interconnection provisions did not address this unique arrangement that was filed. I quote at JA 420, PJM standard tariff for generation interconnection is designed to address the interconnection of new generation stations to transmission facilities, does not address the unique situation presented here. Everything from the beginning was not identifying these as network upgrades, never during the negotiations identifying this as a problem in any way, always indicating this is how you go about to get revenue, you have to file a Section 205. And that's borne out, our negotiators' affidavits are borne out by the filings made by PECO and PJM. PJM, in its filing of the ISA, in fact, referenced the discussion of the EWG as being an issue with regard to the right to seek revenue. It was always our issue with revenue.
Mr. Krantz, you have used your time and then
okay.
Some.
Yep.
I think there was a matter you were going to get back to us on, is that correct?
What was it, a petition for rehearing?
On the request for rehearing?
So we'll hear your rebuttal to the extent of...
Okay, we'll do that.
Good morning. Carol Banta for the Commission. At council table with me is Karen Hill and Donald Kaplan, who are counsel for the interveners. They don't have argument time today, but they're available. To begin with, first, there is no distinction between transmission facilities and network upgrades. Network upgrades can be transmission facilities. By definition, in the tariff, network upgrades are transmission related. They can be transmission facilities themselves. The Commission said in rehearing order paragraph 16, there's no distinction in the tariff between network upgrades and transmission facilities. just to clear that up.
What do you say to their argument that on the old lines, PICO was able to charge? Now they have replaced those lines, and they're not able to charge.
Well, we would quibble with the word replacement, and I think it helps if we look at what we're talking about. On JA 458, yeah. It appears several places, but the diagram's at JA 458. This was a section of the PICO transmission line. It was operating fine. There was nothing wrong with it, as far as we know. There was no call for replacement. There was no need to upgrade it. It was serving the grid. The sole reason that it was cut, and it was cut.
I got that part. Mm-hmm. But if it had not been cut, PICO would have been able to charge for whatever the costs of that part of the line were, right?
Right, because yes. It had been, yes.
Yes. And now Old Dominion has this line, or the generators have this line, and mm-hmm. they want to charge. Imagine, the hypothetical is they want to charge exactly what PICO would otherwise be charging.
Right.
Now, what's the answer to that argument?
The answer to that is and that's why the commission looked to the tariff, that the sole reason to construct these new facilities and incur these new costs, both of construction and costs going forward, the sole reason for this was the interconnection. There was no reason to do this.
The old line come out of PICO's rate base, or is it still in the rate base?
I don't know for sure. I'm not aware that it has. But we're talking about a few hundred feet, maybe one tower that was cut solely for this reason. There was no reason to have a substation here at all. If you're not connecting lines to it, there was no reason that there needed to be a substation.
What about the impending peaking problem?
The commission didn't address that because, certainly the commission has an interest in increasing generation and adding generation. But I don't think there was ever any discussion that this particular generation facility and the economic and business choices made by these generators were so necessary that the cost should be imposed in the transmission charges. There's just no discussion of that here. Sure, the commission does want more generation in general, but how that impacts these particular facilities, these generators made the decision that it was economically desirable and efficient to do this, and that's exactly what the commission wants generators to do. But it wants to allocate the costs in such a way that generators make intelligent, efficient decisions for generation siting and so on. And that's
just
commission policy.
Again, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I understand exactly how this works, but mm-hmm. as a consequence of this, PICO has lower costs because they don't have to pay for what was ever, don't have the cost of this remaining part of the line, the small part of the line. These guys have costs, and these guys aren't able to charge for those costs. Forget about the cost of the generation. Forget about the cost of the cutting. Forget about anything like that. Only the transmission.
Well, there's nothing in this record to tell us what those costs are. Again, this was a few hundred feet of line and a tower. Mm-hmm. PICO is still operating, that section of the grid. Well, I should say PJM is operating, but yeah. PICO owns that part of the grid. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what that economic impact. If someone wants to make the case that maybe a 206, maybe someone should challenge PICO to remove that part from the rate base, we're talking about it's got to be minuscule, and I'm not sure anyone could quantify it. And if they did, this isn't the place to do it.
And would it be minuscule from their point of view also for not for any of the construction, just for the service over that part? Would that also be minuscule?
To whom?
To them.
To PICO?
No. Or, to the generators. It's correct that no part of the substation cost can be charged, no part of the cost of constructing or anything else, only the costs PICO previously had for that couple hundred feet. Would that also be minuscule?
Well, this is where we go back to the tariff. I mean, the costs of these facilities assigned to the generators, whatever those costs are. And it's not because they're minuscule or not. It's because they're but for.
I got that point, but I just wonder: would it be minuscule whatever the costs of these couple hundred feet are?
For PICO, I suspect it would be minuscule. For the generators, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I also want to make a point about Section 37. When we start talking about this apparently new argument about the additional benefits that the substation offers to the grid, Section 37, the test is but for. assigning the cost to the generators depends on the but-for aspect. The additional benefits, the net benefits idea in Section 37 goes to, I believe, your ability to get credits, which aren't even at issue here. And the commission said in its order, they didn't make any argument that there were additional benefits, so that just wasn't presented below.
Idea of additional benefit by ability of cessation or enhancement of ability to cease service at the substation point, was that ever raised at the commission stage?
I don't believe so. I mean, the commission looked certainly that it is true that these facilities were sized, might have been sized larger than if you're only thinking about the radial lines that the generators are connecting to them. But because, for whatever reason that doesn't seem contested in this record, it was necessary to splice out the PICO line and attach the two 900-foot lines to it, then the transmission, the electricity from the grid was going to be flowing through that. So it did have to be sized larger to accommodate that transmission, but it's still but for, because that's only because the splice happened, that the other grid traffic or grid power would be traveling through. This was only because, for whatever reason, again, no one seems to contest that, I don't know, the best engineering way to do this was to splice the line.
I'm not sure that's addressing the same question, but I think you got it in there. Thank you.
I hope so. If not, I can certainly try again. I do want to make the point, this was not a summary dismissal. The commission, the generators exercised their unilateral right to make a 205 filing. The commission absolutely recognized that, considered it thoroughly on the merits, and found, applying Section 205 and reading the tariff, that these rates were not just and reasonable. So to keep characterizing it as a summary dismissal, that's not at all what the commission said. You've availed yourself of your right to make a Section 205 filing. No one contested that this was in some way an improper filing. It's just not just and reasonable, because Section 37 of the tariff governs here. On the zero recovery point of Section 2.2.1, I think the commission addressed that pretty thoroughly. Said, it says, you know, you have the right to forego any right that you may have. The negative inference that you necessarily have an entitlement to recovery is reading a lot into that provision, and the commission found that wasn't the reason.
So was that just preserving the right of unilateral action?
It's a procedural right. Well, Section 2.2 is the generator or the transmission owner's unilateral right to make a filing, and then that additional sentence in 2.2.1 was their right to claim a zero revenue requirement for reasons of PUCA, which was in existence at
the
time.
So the most it did with reference to the present claim is it did not foreclose them making this claim, but it included no implication of how the ruling would be.
Certainly, because the commission said we don't read this to mean that when you have a procedural right to make a filing, that the substantive outcome of that filing is preordained.
No, but you don't read it, at least I hope you can tell us that you don't read it either, to have no significance.
Of course not. I mean, it is. Of course it has significance in that, and again, that was what was at issue in the Atlantic City case. It's the unilateral right to make a filing. The transmission owners entered into this collective agreement, but unilaterally they retain a lot of their pre-existing rights, and entering into that agreement doesn't foreclose them from exercising. And so these petitioners did exercise their right. They came in with a 205 filing that was found not just and reasonable under the terms of the tariff.
I may be confusing this with another regime, but I thought there was some case law suggesting that Commission either had to or ought to make sure they have a right of unilateral action.
That was Atlantic.
Was that
Atlantic? Yeah, well, I think really what was at issue in Atlantic City, if I remember correctly, was that I think the Commission was trying to foreclose unilateral filings with regard to rate design, and the Court rejected that. That just isn't at issue here. But here, absolutely, the commission recognized you have a unilateral right. In fact, I can give you the citation in the initial order, I believe it was, that said you've availed yourself of the right and these rates aren't just and reasonable. Paragraph 25 of the initial order said that. Okay. I can address any questions the court has, any other issues.
Thank you, Ms. Brandt.
Thank you.
You have your argument. Mr. Grandis, the answer to court's question?
Thank you, Your Honor.
What was the answer to, was it Judge Garland's question?
Yes, the answer, Your Honor, is that at JA 360 in a rehearing request, we talk about the substation. We do not mention curtail.
Okay, let me ask one more question. Is your request here that you would only get the amount in, into the rate base that PECO previously had for that couple hundred feet, including whatever the depreciated value of it and everything else was, or were you asking for something different than that?
We're asking for our investment, Your Honor.
So that's different. That's quite
that
different.
That is different. It's under our, the investment under FERC's standard rate-making standards for rate of return, rate base, et cetera.
So that would be more money than existed before you added the substation.
It would result in a very slight rate increase, which was not protested by anyone other than other TOs except for one transmission owner who supported us. Now, these are our statutory rights, that we retained under the transmission owners agreement. There was never any Section 37 network upgrade preclusive discussion brought up to us during the discussions. The TOs had an opportunity to put in affidavits to contradict the affidavits submitted by Mr. Tessum of Cedars and by Mr. Tatum of Old Dominion. They did not. And in the face of that, FERC still finds it unambiguous that the additional sentence added in Section 2.2.1 just gave us a unilateral right to have our rate-making application denied or summarily dismissed without any having any hearing about rate base level, benefits, et cetera. The substation clearly enhanced system operations, and I believe is concluded in the RTEP now. The benefits of having a curtailment, being able to curtail is a benefit, but again, our benefit argument is based on the fact that we own and operate, well, we own facilities that are being used to provide jurisdictional service.
And if I understood your first answer, was that the curtailment was no part of the record?
It's the substation is discussed, Your Honor, about it being twice the size, but the curtailment language is not there. The commission also has indicated that when the interconnection service agreement was filed, that just describes what types of costs you have to pay. Since we were building the network up, well, we're building our transmission facilities ourselves. It's no wonder that it's not listed in the interconnection service agreement schedule. However, Section 9 at JA 394, Section 9 of the interconnection service agreement clearly says that the network upgrades are described in the specification sheet. If you go to the specification sheet, there is no discussion at all, mention at all, of these facilities. There's a mention of the Peach Bottom facilities, which were network upgrades. There's a mention of the direct attachment facilities, but absolutely no reference here at all. Section 37 and the network upgrade was just never brought up when we filed these agreements at the commission. It was always regarded as a unique transmission owner to transmission owner arrangement, not to be addressed under the standard generator interconnection. And as a result, you end up with a contractual construction that makes the second sentence of 2.2.1, which was spent months negotiating, not just for a right to have something summarily dismissed, when they knew that these were the only facilities we had, it makes that second sentence superfluous. Excuse me? The second sentence of Section 2.2.1, which is the each party shall have the unilateral right to adopt a revenue requirement of zero and to forgo any right or claim to compensation for providing transmission services under the PJM tariff or any other document.
I thought it was undisputed that provision was directed, at least in part, to requirements of then extant Public Utility Holding Commission Act, the Holding Company Act.
Yes, Your Honor. It was up to our election whether to seek it. We advised them that we didn't want the revenue now because of our concerns of the Holding Company Act. Later, FERC clarified in an order in 2004 on Red Bud Energy that an EWG could, in fact, earn revenue from use of transmission facilities that were built in conjunction with its generator. So even before the Holding Company Act was repealed in 2005, there was a change in the regulatory structure.
But not when this was drafted.
No, but the only reason was our reason of not getting revenue, not because of Section 37 or the network upgrade definition precluding us. So if we didn't have a right to forgo, we can't forgo a right that we didn't have in the first place. We spent months negotiating these sentences this year.
If you had provided benefits, you would be able to get a credit for that.
Under Section 37, Your Honor, and
right.
We're outside of that.
Right, but imagine that that were the case. This would allow you to forgo that credit, right? This provision that we're talking about now, 2.2, would have allowed you to forgo receiving anything for that, right?
Well, I think this is compensation as a transmission owner, not as a credits under a tariff.
Right.
I think it's different.
Imagine you provided system-wide benefits as a transmission owner.
Yes, Your Honor.
You would be able to get that even under 37, but you would want it to forgo those during this period, right?
During the period, we wanted to forgo any revenue from use of our facilities because of the holding company.
There's nothing about this case that would prohibit you from getting revenues if you provided a system-wide upgrade tomorrow, right?
Well, everything flows back to our facilities. I mean, we already have new financial obligations imposed on us. The wave trap mentioned in our rehearing, $200,000, it all flows from these facilities. So if everything flows back to these facilities, which they say is all Section 37, then there's no right to recover anything. So their construction makes superfluous the second sentence, which was only added as our right if we elected to do so to go forward, and makes unavailable the first sentence. The first sentence is, you can change your revenue requirement any time. We have under the second sentence, the right to have a revenue requirement of zero, and the first sentence of 2.2.1, the right to change that. If everything was such preclusive, if this was such a bedrock principle of the regulatory regime, I'm sorry, I'll just finish up in 2 seconds. If this was such a bedrock principle that we could not recover it, and if it was a concern of the TOs and PJM, you would think there would be an express acknowledgement, since these were only facilities, that under no circumstance do we have a right to revenue. And if they didn't want to put it in the form of agreement, some side letter that says you do not have the right. So by, and.
I think we have your argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.